working in classrooms for 30 years, and we have a lot to say on great schools and what makes happy teachers and students.
We're happy teachers now, but we've both been through hard times. We're not afraid to open up in the hope that we can help others.
We delve into well-being, mental health, parenthood, workload, and with input from an array of guests, provide lots of solutions.
Teachers, parents, anyone with a vested interest in children getting the best education, this is your go-to podcast. Hi, welcome back to episode 2 of season 2. Very exciting. So this one is all about boundaries and being able to say no. So this episode is, how do boundaries create happy teachers? And Roxy's going to begin with her break time banter.
We used to do a yearly trip to Rochester, Castle and Cathedral. We used to do the high street as well as part of geography. So we used to do like geography, history, RE, all in one little trip. Anyway, I remember one year we were going on the trip, and obviously the worst thing that can happen on the coach is a kid throwing up, like, oh, by all means. And I went on the trip for 5 years in a row. This was before COVID hit. So like every year, and I was always the cathedral tour guide, basically, for everybody. So I know that cathedral like the back of my hand in Rochester. Give anyone a tour. So anyway, this kid had thrown up all over himself and all over the person next to him. I mean, it was a vile amount of stick. I was just like, what on earth? So like, we walk him off the, like, does the walk of shame off the coach, like, and he, I'm not joking, Jenny, this sick was just white. Everything was white. There was like no other colour. And so me being me, like, everyone else is like, what, on the side, like gonna throw up themselves. Me being me, I was just like, what on earth did you have for breakfast this morning? I was
like, you're just so curious.
What did you have for breakfast? Because it was pure white. I can't describe it in any other way. I just don't even remember it now. Like, and he's like, oh, miss, I had, and he was a tiny little dot of a kid as well. Like, he was actually so short and like very slight little kids. I was thinking, God, that is a little sick. Like, what the fuck? Oh God, take that bit out. I was thinking, what the hell? So he's like, oh, me, yeah, I had milk and a Milky Bar. And I was like, you had milk and a Milky Bar
for breakfast.
I was like, you didn't have like cereal or anything. Like that. No, just milk, a glass of milk. So like, he said it was a pretty big glass of milk and a Milky Bar. And I was like, well, no wonder the sick.
Yeah, even that's making me feel sick right now.
Yes, what a breakfast to have. I was thinking like, what, a milk and a Milky Bar? Like, no wonder you felt sick on the coach. I would have felt sick on the coach if I'd had that for breakfast. And I just felt more sorry for the kid next to him, to be honest with you, than him himself. I mean, we had no spare clothes with us. So we basically, and we were spending the whole day in Rochester. There was no way to get him back to school. So we had to go, I remember we had to go to like one of, because he was a boy. So one of the male members of staff had to go like in the toilet with him, like help him like clean his blazer, his jumper, like literally everything. And he just stank the rest of the day. Like, it wasn't good. But anyway, we made it through. I did have someone pee themselves on the coach once, so that was definitely not the, that might not have been the worst bodily fluid coach story that I've got, to be honest with you. But anyway,
I shouldn't go into this in too much depth, but I feel like secondary school teachers have more wee and poo stories than I think non-teachers out there would imagine.
Yeah, because I feel like, well, especially, I mean, you've just come back from a trip recently, haven't you, with the school, like, and you've definitely come back with some stories as well. So I think the stories that you have from these trips are just actually hilarious. I've not done many overnighters, but the ones that I have done, again, I have stories from those trips for sure. Oh, God. It's always a fun time, trips with kids, with teenagers especially.
I very much enjoyed that break time banter, and I think, you know, I think it's good that it wasn't on the theme of boundaries. It was still a very good story. So
I feel like there was a theme of boundaries there, because I needed a boundary from that kid who was throwing up on the coach. Because I think if I'd seen him throwing up, I would have actually vommed myself like on that. I feel like you maybe have to have quite a sick sense of humour to be a teacher as well, maybe at some point. But anyway, boundaries. I wanted to do this podcast episode because I think boundaries are so, so important. Am I very good at putting boundaries in place? Probably not. Probably not. Or actually, no, I put boundaries in place. I am really, really bad at saying no. And I think, Jenny, you're really, really good at saying no. And or like, I don't know why, but I end up feeling some kind of guilt when I say no. Now, that shouldn't be the case. Why am I feeling guilty when I'm saying no, when actually I can't handle the extra workload or whatever else? Maybe it makes me feel like I'm being incompetent or something like that by saying no. I don't know. There's obviously some deep-rooted issue there.
There's loads of things, aren't there? There's all these different kind of, you can do all these tests for personality types, aren't you? And they can't you? I mean, sorry. And you can talk about like the people pleaser. And I am not a people pleaser. I'm not a people pleaser.
Yeah, I think if I'd done one of those tests, I would come out 100%. What's the thing where, so there's type A, there's different types of personalities, isn't there? There's like type A, type B, whatever. I'm definitely more of a type B personality where I'm like, yeah, people pleaser. Like, I find it really difficult to say no. I don't kind of, like I said, I get that internal guilt when I say no, and it almost makes me feel like I've done something wrong, even though I know that it's the right thing to do to say no in whatever scenario that is. And I feel like in teaching, you know, we get asked a lot, don't we, to do extra bits and pieces that aren't necessarily part of our job description, or maybe we can't even fit it in. Like, maybe it's that we want to do it, but we can't. Like, you know, there's just time constraints or whatever. I don't know. There's so many different reasons why you might choose to not do something. But yeah, I want to like I want to try and normalize saying no and having those boundaries in teaching, which directly links to our previous episode of workload, and having those boundaries meaning that the workload feels more doable and you don't feel as burnt out essentially by the end of it. So yeah, I think one of the boundaries that I put in place when I went into my new school was the times that I start school and leave school. So obviously school starts at a certain time and finishes at a certain time. You have to be there for those times. I'm not saying that you can negotiate that, but I'm saying that, okay, so my school, I think you have to be like, what do they call it? Directed time. So directed time is between 8:20 and 3:10. So you technically have to be at school in those hours, right? Between 8:20 and 3:10. But I actually, most mornings, and if you ever watch my lipstick in the car stories, which I do every day when we're at school, I often get to work at 8 in the morning, and I always make sure I have gone by 4 o'clock. I will only leave later than 4 if I have had something really heavy pastorally happen in the day, because I'm ahead of year, and that is really on a rare occasion. That is not every single day, but other than that, 4 o'clock, when 4 o'clock hits, I'm out of the building, because for me it's so important. Well, for me, since having children, it's so important to make sure I see my kids after school. My kids go to clubs and stuff like that, and I want to be able to take them to those clubs. And it takes me half an hour to get home. So essentially, I'm home by 4:30. And for me, that's doable. My kids don't go to bed till like 7, 7:15. So actually, that means I've spent a good chunk of time with them after school. You know, they're at school as well in the day, so I'm not going to see them in the day, even if I wasn't working. So yeah, and because I don't get to really see them in the morning because of teaching, obviously, I leave quite early in the morning. I think it's really important for me to put those boundaries in time wise. Now, have I told anyone about these boundaries? No, these are boundaries in my own head. I don't like openly go and talk to my head teacher and say, oh, by the way, I get in at 8 in the morning and I leave at 4 o'clock. But to be honest, even if I had that concept, he wouldn't care less, because, like, genuinely, my head teacher is like, if you're there in your directed time, that's all I really kind of care about, you know?
And that's all people should care about. I mean, like, it would be insane.
Yeah.
I just find, I guess, because we both work at places that do just respect the teacher and recognise that you get the work done, I couldn't quite believe in 2024 if there are still head teachers out there that believe in presenteeism, that make you feel like you have to be there from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. It's just like, God, you're so out of touch.
No, I mean, I know you remember, like, our previous school. I mean, this was right at the very beginning when it was a growing school and didn't have many year groups at all. People stay until like 7 o'clock. I think some nights people stay until even later. And I was I was staying until like 6. And now I look back and I think, why? Why did I stay that late? But you're right. It's almost like this thing of having to prove yourself. You know, if you go in really early and stay really late. Now, it's different if you want to stay or go in really early. Some people really like, you know, 6 in the morning or whatever else. I know someone that literally arrives at school at 6 every single day. But that's his choice because he likes to do his work in the morning. And that's fine.
He leaves early.
He leaves relatively early. But again, he is a little bit older and he often says that he actually prefers to, you know, leave at certain times so he avoids traffic and stuff like that. You know, he's got other reasons to be in school at those times. But for me, I'm like, I know, unless there's some big traffic jam, I know it takes me half an hour to get to work. So if I leave by 7:30, I'll be there by 8. That's fine. I mean, that's before the directed time of 8:20, but I know that I want to be in by 8. That gives me 20 minutes to just, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour to organise myself for the day. And then, yeah, fine, leave by 4 o'clock. Like I said, unless something massive happens where I need to be there till later. But other than that, no, like, I'm putting those boundaries in place because it's really important to me. Obviously, different people have different types of boundaries, but the time one, since leaving an old school where that time thing was just horrendous, like, I think my original contract was from 8 till 5:10. Original contract, I think, was we couldn't leave school. Our directed time was 5:10.
Yeah, it was that, because that's when I was there that first year. It was 5:10, yeah. And then they changed it to 4:30.
Oh, but that was quite a win. But
that's ridiculous looking back, isn't it, being told that you have to do 8 till 4:30 in the building, even if the kids have gone home an hour early.
Yeah, so one thing is that, you know, like, things like appointments and stuff like that, you know, some, I guess, you know, if I really wanted to, now obviously my directed time is till 3:10, so actually I could get a doctor's appointment after that. I could, like, do whatever, go to the post office, you know, like, normal admin-y things that you need to do in life that, like, obviously close at certain times. So I just think those time boundaries for me are the one, and because I think maybe because the choice was taken away from me in my previous school, and it was in my contract, and so I felt really awkward leaving before that time. Sometimes they would pick up on it and say, like, oh, where's blah, blah, like, and you'd be like, oh, well, they've gone to a doctor's appointment. It's like, oh, well, it's before 5:10. And you're like, well, you know, so.
You add all that up, that is a long working week, isn't it, for a teacher that's supposed to do quite a bit less than that. So I think I was going to talk about something else, but I think it's also interesting to talk about the time boundary from the perspective as a part-time member of staff, because I am quite good at saying no. I'm not quite sure where that's come from, but I am quite good at saying no. I say it in lots of different ways. I was saying to Roxy, wasn't I, before the podcast, I just saw something on Instagram a while ago, and it was just saying if someone tries to get you to do something, you just go, oh, I'm not on that committee. And I just quite like that as an idea. You can be a bit jokey about it, but you're just like, that's not actually part of what I'm paid to do, no, sort of thing. But a lot of the things that I hear from other part-time members of staff is they find it hard to protect the time that they're not paid for. So, you know, say you've got a 6.7 contract, they quite often say, oh, either I do that so I can get the work done on my non-working day, or, oh, I'm paid 0.7, but I actually end up, even though I'm supposed to go home halfway through the day, I end up staying till 4 o'clock to get everything done. And to me, I'm just like, that's not okay that a senior leader is getting that extra free labor out of you. And I would just not do that. So I, at the moment, because I do a few other things as well, like I work about 2 3/4 days a week. So I'm in the building 3 days a week, but I'm not doing 3 full days a week because I'm not paid to do 3 full days a week. And to me, that is incredibly simple. So every second Thursday, I finish at 12:45 and I'm out of the building at 12:45 because I'm not paid to be there after 12:45.
Yeah, I think that's really important, actually, that, and you're right. I've got a few friends that work part time and they're like, oh, yeah, but I mark on my day off, or I do this on my day off. And I'm like, well, then really, you should be getting the money for it and you should be going into work, because that's getting it to actually be in what time.
And it's,
I'd certainly be.
You were saying a previous episode, wasn't it? That, you know, some of these things, it's, you know, the management need to be spoken to however you want to do it. If it's, you know, gets as serious as going through the unions, but if you're being paid to do 3 days a week and then you're working on one of your non-working days, that's completely not okay.
Well, yeah, it brings into question, you know, like the working on the weekend type of thing. Mm-hmm. Like me as a full-time member of staff, well, my only other time to work would be at the weekend then, if that was the case, or in the evenings, obviously. And this is one of the other things that I wanted to speak about today, was that I don't do anything do my job on the weekend. Nothing. I think my new school, I want to say I'd done 1 hour on a Sunday, and this was only because mocks were due in on the Monday and I'd just fallen behind a little bit. That's it. I've no, like, genuinely, my weekend, my time. I don't do anything to do with teaching. Does that make me any less of a teacher? No, I don't believe it does. I genuinely, I actually think I'm a better teacher when I'm fully rested and, you know, like, get to actually spend the weekend doing whatever the hell I want to do, than dedicating it towards work. I'm not working 7 days a week. Like, and it's not even about pay. This is just about my own mental health and me really having time to do other things and, you know, have projects like this, like the, you know, the podcast and like other things that I really, really want to do. And I just think putting those boundaries in place. Again, this is another thing I get asked quite often, especially by newer members of staff, like the ECTs and the trainee teachers. They're like, oh, how do you do it? And I mean, you know, as a trainee teacher, was I working at the weekend? Yeah, probably I was, because, you know, I feel like you're training. There's probably a little bit of a difference there because you're doing essays and other things, like that, not necessarily just teaching in the week, right? But I say to them, no, like, you know what, I actually put this boundary in place quite early on. Like, this wasn't a recent thing. I did put this in place when we were working together, and this was, again, this is a personal boundary that I put in. I know, I don't speak to anybody about it. I don't tell anybody that I'm doing this. I just do it. So when I come home on a Friday, I quite literally do not think about work until Monday morning when I get in the car. Like, I genuinely don't. I don't know. Maybe so I just...
Your mental health, I imagine, as well.
Yeah, and I just got to a point where I was like, no, I'm just going to shut it off from my brain, and I'm not even going to think about it. Like, it's not even going to cross my mind. No, I genuinely don't. Like, even right now, on the Easter holidays... You know, yeah, okay, I'm thinking, oh, Monday, I've probably got, like, no. What, have I looked at my emails? No. Have I opened my OneDrive to look at my lessons? No. Because I'm just thinking, okay, when I go in on Monday, that's fine. I'll just deal with it on Monday. Like,
yeah. So, I definitely do a lot of the same things as you in terms of kind of protecting my time. The other thing that I was going to talk about
which is kind of alluded to before when I talked about, like, I'm not on that committee, is I'm just very clear on my job description and what I'm paid to do. And I'm very clear in the language that I use that if someone's asking something of me that's not in my job description, that's me choosing whether I've got the capacity to give them some extra goodwill and do it, or I choose not to. And that's completely okay. And I don't feel any guilt about that because I'm not paid to do that. And I don't think that should sound heartless. Like, the job description of a teacher is jam-packed enough. And I want to know that at the end of each day, I'm doing my job well. So if I know I have planned good lessons, in the lessons I've performed well because I'm mentally well and I'm happy and I'm engaged, and that I'm doing meaningful marking of their work, I am doing my job.
Yeah.
So if someone asks me to do other things, if I've got capacity, or even things like, I'm trying to think, if someone might ask me to do something, I might say, okay, can you arrange for you and I to have a blocked free period to get that done? If you can, yes, I'll do it. So I think it's kind of putting in boundaries. So if I am going to do something above and beyond, I want to make sure that it's not going to detrimentally affect me. I do want to do things to help. So, you know, at this school that I'm at now, I, for the last 2 years, have performed in the Christmas show. That takes a bit of extra prep work. But again, it's making sure, even just like little things. So if we had to do a practice beforehand, I'd make sure the cover supervisor knew, so I'm not put on cover when I've already arranged to go for a practice dance rehearsal. So I think I'm quite good at doing things beyond my job description if I've got the capacity to, but making sure that if someone's asking something of me, I make sure they've blocked out my time, so I'm not going to suddenly be put on cover or something else, and that I've actually got the time in the week to do it.
I think that's an important thing to note, isn't it? That, like, we often go above and beyond our job description, and we're not saying that you literally, every single teacher is going to stick exactly to what their job description is, although there are some teachers that do, and that's absolutely fine. But going and doing kind of extra stuff that you wouldn't necessarily do on a day-to-day, it's important to think about how that's going to impact your actual, you know, job description that you're getting paid to do. And if it's going to impact it so much that you can't do your job, or you're feeling so stressed and burnt out and whatever else, then actually that is the right time to be able to say no. And that's why I do envy you in a way, because I really wish that I had that no in me, because I really, honestly, a lot of the time I say yes and then I get frustrated with myself that I've said yes, because I feel like I couldn't say no for whatever reason. And then there's that, always that feeling of like, I'm not doing enough, or like, I could be doing more. And it's like, well, actually, I don't think I can mentally, physically, like, emotionally fit it in anyway, even if I wanted to. And so that's really, really important, I think, what you said about the impact on other things and on yourself, but other people as well.
And I think what you were saying there about, you know, could I be doing more? I think that's part of the problem in teaching as well, isn't it? That, you know, you can always do more. You can always make a lesson. Well, you might think you're making it better. You might not be at all, actually. But you could always spend more time planning a lesson. You can always mark something for a bit longer. And it's this idea that, again, it links back to what we were saying about presenteeism and people that sometimes feel the need to stay in the workplace longer than they need to, that kind of more is better. And it's not necessarily, because you've probably found the same as me, but I quite often find that some of the lessons that you sometimes kind of have to do, you know, kind of end up being some of your best lessons. So, you know, when you're mentally in the space that you're in the zone, you've planned a lesson, but a kid's asked a really interesting question, so it goes off on a tangent and the lesson is not where you expected it to go. So in that sense, it's not as well planned, maybe. But then you end up having this amazing lesson. And then on the contrary, I feel like when, you know, you're being observed for a lesson, say, you have the tendency at any age, really, to kind of over plan it and then feel more stressed because you probably spent, you're probably a bit tired because you spent longer planning it than normal. Because you put all that time into it, you then feel like, I really want it to go well. So as soon as a kid actually maybe asks quite an interesting question, you might feel like, oh God, they're derailing my perfectly planned lesson.
Yeah.
And all this time on. And actually, I sometimes find that I could plan like a brilliant lesson and it'll take me about 7 or 8 minutes or something.
Honestly, I feel like you're right. Sometimes the best lessons are off the cuff. You've just quickly thought of an idea and you kind of need to. I often like stew over ideas for quite a long time. And then all of a sudden I'm like, nope, I've got it. I just like quickly write it down or like quickly just put it into a PowerPoint with a few titles or whatever. And then it's like, oh, it's done. And it's like, okay, it's there. So yeah, I think boundaries are so important. And I know that they can be in so many different parts of our job. But I do think there are some schools that really respect those boundaries, and then there are some schools that really don't respect the boundaries and don't care. And I've often found that, and this is through friends' experiences as well, that academies definitely seem to be less open to kind of keeping those boundaries. I don't think they're that open.
I guess it's this idea that legally they're in a slightly different situation to a local education maintained school, aren't they? They don't have to abide by the exact same rules, so they can do things differently. And some things they do can be fantastic, but there is the kind of danger that they don't have the Burgundy Book. Like, for those that don't know who that is, it's kind of what that is. It's kind of the set of rules that maintained schools have to abide by. They do have to abide by lots of things, but they've got extra freedoms and they might choose to use them in a way that doesn't help the individual teacher.
And I think this actually leads so nicely into your get in the bin, the fact that some schools can alter their job descriptions, that it kind of, because of their freedoms, they do that, and it can really, really kind of encroach on those boundaries. So go on, Jenny, I'll hand over to you.
So my get in the bin is the word expectations. So you sometimes find it in a job description. So, you know, you're going for interview and then you get the contract through once you've got the job, and it kind of quite clearly outlines what you have to do with all these bullet points. And then it kind of has this little bit at the bottom that says, and any other reasonable expectations that the head teacher may have of you. And I'm like, oh, I almost feel like I don't want to sign the contract at that point, because I'm like, what are these expectations?
Yeah.
And is that head teacher's definition of reasonable the same as my definition of reasonable?
Probably not the same expectation at all.
And obviously different head teachers can be very different. So some are a lot more reasonable than others, but it's just this idea that you're signing a contract and you don't know what they're actually asking of you.
Does this exist in other jobs? Like, I have to ask my sisters whether they, when they sign their contract, whether it says and any other reasonable expectation, because I think that's actually quite crazy, isn't it? That you have a job description where you know, okay, I need to do this, 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 and this. But actually, they've almost just said on the bottom, and anything else we want you to do.
Yeah, because the thing is, I can sort of see the logic that they're saying, okay, here's a standard history teacher job description. But things may arise over your however many years that you're in the school that we can't foresee right now in this job description. So that's why we put this kind of almost disclaimer in at the bottom. Yeah. But I think they could do it differently. I think they could say, from time to time, there may be some additional responsibilities as well as the ones outlined here. These would always be discussed with you, and we would ensure that they are manageable within your workload. Like, you could reword it to kind of reassure the person that we're not trying to just put all these extra things on you and actually they're going to be very unreasonable. You could just say, this list can't be exhaustive because occasionally something might arise, but we would always look at you know, what can give. So I guess that's my kind of go for the win. Like, that shouldn't exist at the end of a contract. A contract should be a bit more thought through. And then obviously for most people, you're already in the job. Most people aren't listening to this podcast thinking, shall I sign a contract right in front of me right now? But I think when someone more senior than you mentions expectations or kind of things linked to that, like, oh, thank you to those that went the extra mile. So kind of linked to this, one thing that really annoys me is in staff briefings where they kind of highlight the people that went the extra mile or went above and beyond, because I'm not saying they shouldn't be praised. So if you do, you know, take a whole year group on a trip for a week in the holidays, that is hard work. So I, you know, just got back from a ski trip in February. But equally, I don't want to be thanked for that if everyone else isn't being thanked just for being generally great teachers.
This is the thing, isn't it? When you, especially when you're starting to pick singular teachers out or whatever, it kind of, I mean, it links to praising the classroom as well. Like, you know, we're not, if we were doing that to students, imagine if we were only picking, imagine if we were only picking out one student per week, let's say, and we said, right, you are the best student ever because you've done this. Like, it makes all the other students feel like they haven't done enough that week. So I do feel like, yeah, that is definitely something where, again, it, the intention is a good intention. There's a good intention there, but it doesn't necessarily.
But, you know, again, just thinking of it now out loud, I do think there are ways around it. So if I were a head teacher, instead of me going into a staff briefing and specifically thanking, you know, say we're recording this, aren't we, just at the end of the Easter holidays, instead of coming in and saying thank you to, I don't know, the PE teachers that led this trip here and to these teachers that led this trip, I would just say, I've individually thanked all the teachers that have done these extra things. And then I would just make it a kind of a broader kind of well done to you all for the last term. You all work so hard. I hope you all had a great break. I just don't see why individual teachers have to get praised for something they chose to do in their spare time in front of everyone else. Because it does by default make the other people think, oh, I didn't run a school trip over Easter, or it's like, you didn't have to, they didn't have to. Like, and also they don't need to act in front of everyone else.
But I think this any other reasonable expectation thing is, yeah, it's not the best. And actually I've seen it used in a negative way where they have added like really unreasonable things. Like making people do loads of extra lunchtime duties and whatever else. And it's like, you can't go to the union and complain because you've signed that contract that says any other reasonable expectation. So I think there's definitely something to be said there about using the word reasonable, and also using this word expectation, you know, so and this can totally change things. But yeah. So yeah, boundaries, super important, definitely linked workload, and something that will definitely be mentioned in other podcasts, different boundaries in different areas. And I'm sure we've spoken lots about before, actually, if I can come back to the other ones. So join us next time to talk about teacher retention, which is actually always something on the government's mind.
Yeah, it's always in the news, isn't it? It's always, and I just think it's one of those things as well. I think recruitment and retention get used together a lot of the time, and then the focus of government initiatives, I feel, is often about how do we recruit more teachers.
Actually,
we get loads, we were both watching something, weren't we, from one of the Mr. P's talking about we don't have a recruitment crisis, actually. We've got loads of we've got lots of people that are qualified teachers in the UK. It's them leaving teaching. And I'm going to talk about a bit about this next time, aren't I? Like, our age group, actually, women in their 30s are the people that leave, like 6,000 of us every single year. But we're qualified teachers still living in England, still able to teach. But they haven't retained us. And I just think there's not enough being said about how do you retain experienced teachers.
Definitely. I totally agree. And we're going to have a whole discussion about teacher retention. And, you know, Jenny herself left teaching and came back. But so they weren't able to retain you for the whole time. So, you know, that is definitely something that you've got a lot of experience on. So, yeah, hopefully you'll join us for that. And again, go on to our socials. We're always interacting on there. We are always happy for the discussion. Hopefully see you soon. Bye. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Bye.